representing the appellant, Hogwood Industries Pension Trust Fund. Footnote 7 in the LaFrenz opinion, that's why we're here. The issue in this case is how we apply the broad control group provision in ERISA as construed by the Ninth Circuit to the facts in this case, which are that the owners of the withdrawing employer also owned income real property, which they leased out for income and profit. The issue is whether or not that leasing activity is a trade or business, and the parties agree that it's under the common control of the owners. So trade or business is our issue. We have one Ninth Circuit case to provide guidance. And that case is Board of Trustees of the Western Conference of Teamsters Pension Trust Fund versus LaFrenz. In the LaFrenz case, we had owners of the withdrawing employer, which was a premix, ready-mix company called Lewiston Premix, also owned two Mack trucks, which they leased out. And they leased them to their company, the Premix company. The
that's why it was something integral to the business, closely associated with the business.
It does sound like that, and that is certainly the distinction that has been drawn by the district court judge here, and by other district courts, and of course by the defendants in this case. However, reading the LaFrenz opinion, the court made it very clear that that fact that the property was leased to the withdrawing employer was not material in the court's decision. The court says, well, the LaFrenz's claim they didn't lease the trucks to their own company. The evidence shows that they did do so. However, we agree with the district court judge that there need not be any economic nexus between the two trades or businesses. And we therefore conclude that these two businesses were commonly controlled trades or businesses.
Now, I gather that in either instance with regard to the trucks or with regard to the three residences here, you wouldn't be arguing that it was a trade or business if they only owned the truck and or the house, but didn't.
Yes, that's correct. For example, I believe that the Van Tiles owned their own home. So they lived in it. We wouldn't claim that that was a trade or business.
So if they didn't have, if they just had the one home and they rented it, that would be a business, in your view?
If they had income property that they rented out, it would be a business, whether it was one or several.
And whether it was they made $1,000 or, in this case, closer to $21,000, I think it was.
Yes, that's correct. I don't think the statute, which says all commonly owned trades or businesses are treated as a single.
And what is reachable with regard to the withdrawal liability? Is it just the rents or is it the house?
It's the assets of the business. And in this, the related business in this particular, I'm sorry for interrupting.
So that's here.
So here, the business is a proprietorship, just as it was in LaFrenz. The LaFrenzes leased their trucks out in an unprotected form. They didn't have a company that did it. They just did it. They owned them and rented them out. They were personally liable.
What assets are the trucks?
Well, it's whatever assets they have that a judgment can be entered against them personally. And can be executed on whatever assets they have.
But the Van Tools, while the tractor business was operated, earned a salary, and they took some of that salary and invested it in an index fund account and made money thereby. Would that be reachable?
Well, it wouldn't be considered a related trade or business. if the index fund were part of their general assets and they were a judgment, a money judgment against them, then yes, it would be reachable as an asset that, against which you could execute a judgment against the hedge.
So the withdrawal liability is not limited to the trader business?
The withdrawal liability is limited to the entire control group. It depends on what the other trades or businesses, what form they take. This happens to be a proprietorship. It's in an unprotected form. In some cases, and this situation actually does arise somewhat frequently in withdrawal liability cases, the owners of your withdrawing employer also own income property. Sometimes they own it in an LLC, for example, or some other business form that they own. Their common ownership of that business brings it into the control group, but the form of the business dictates who is liable for it. So, for example, if it's an LLC, the LLC is liable, not the owners of the LLC.
Let's take Judge Hawkins' hypothetical one step further. I know you don't quite go on here based on your briefing, but just assume that 12's invested in stocks or 401k instead of purchasing these three properties, or it sounds like they purchased these three properties for future retirement purposes. Could your client access the 401k or the stocks purchase?
I would say no, without anything further, because what we're trying to distinguish is there any business activity? If they just purchased publicly held stocks, they just hold them and own them, that wouldn't constitute a trader business.
The question we get down to whether there's an economic relationship between the, if we can use a broad term like investment, and the tractor business itself. Is that a question we have?
Well, we know there isn't an economic relationship other than common ownership.
So the absence of such an economic relationship, can withdrawal liability still attach?
Correct. That is the question. And the district court properly noted that in LaFrenz, the Ninth Circuit laid down the rule that there doesn't have to be an economic relationship between the control group members.
That the statute says nothing like that.
No, it says all commonly owned, all commonly controlled trades or businesses shall be treated as a single employer.
But could that fact influence why you regard it as a trade or business?
Well, that was the district court's analysis. That whether or not there is a economic relationship between the two activities.
Let's assume we agree, and it seems to be the right one from within, the funds or whatever it's called, says no. But still, in terms of looking at the statute and saying what is a trade or business, you might therefore insist on something more consequential than you would otherwise if there were an incorporation kind of rule.
It's hard for me to see the reason why that would be the case. And in LaFrenz, the court did not, made it clear that they were not relying on the economic relationship to find that this leasing business was within the control group. So I don't think the statute really, there shouldn't be a limitation read into the statute, sort of by going through the back door and saying, well, yeah, we know there doesn't have to be any economic relationship, but we're going to consider the economic relationship when we consider whether an activity is a trade or business or not, such as a.
Therefore, would trade or business have to be something that was engaged in, say, some particular amount of time or to some
Yes, and I think that raises some issues with applying a sort of analysis like the Grotzinger test, which the district court didn't use here. But I think that as long as people can invest in a lot of things, and you can't really make a complete distinction between investments and trades or businesses. People can invest in trades or businesses. This, as you point out, Judge Prezan, is kind of on the borderline in that people can invest in the property for the purpose of investing. You can hold property in the hopes that it will appreciate, you'll get a capital gain in the end. But then there's the additional feature of renting it out again.
And that for purposes of income tax, this was supplemental income that wasn't a capital investment, but it wasn't necessarily a trade or business. Is that right? It didn't have to be a trade or business for IRS income tax purposes.
Well, for income tax purposes, it's treated like a trade or business in which the taxpayer does not materially participate. Because, of course, you can have a trade or business that you own that you don't materially participate in. It's still a trade or business, even though you're just an owner of it.
And it looks like the district court credited the Vangelis, you know, declarations and statements that purpose for owning, you know, at least these properties was to make their charity, retirement, and vacation. Right?
Right, for owning the property.
Right. So do we not, that seems significant.
Well, it's significant in that they own the properties for investment purposes. They rent out the properties for income. The renting out is the trade or business, not the ownership of the properties. Just like in the Friends, if they just own the drugs, that wouldn't be a trade. It's the renting it out that's the trade or business.
Think you win under if we apply Grotzinger?
If I think that if it's applied in the manner that's applied in the Seventh Circuit, probably not. I think there's a way to apply Grotzinger so that we would win. But I think that the way that the courts have approached it in the Seventh Circuit, we would not. I think it's inappropriate to use the Grotzinger test for trying to distinguish an investment from a trade or business because that's not what the test was developed for. But
said Connors in the D.C. Circuit, do you think that was wrongly also decided?
Well, Connors, as I recall, didn't involve property rental or leasing. Was that the coal company?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, it was a farm and a coal company. So that was a different situation.
Okay, do you want to reserve some time?
I would like to reserve my last minute. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, John Bogg, on behalf of the respondents in this case, the Vangelis. I will answer your question directly. If Grotzinger were to apply, whether it be the D.C. Circuit, the Seventh Circuit, or the newer case in 2015 from the Second Circuit, also following Grotzinger, it would be a hands-down win for the respondents, Vangelis.
Why?
Because you have to look at the main purpose of acquiring the property under that test, and it has to be the consistency and time spent in that. It simply doesn't meet it. I don't even think we have to get it. I would invite the court, the Ninth Circuit, to review whether the Grotzinger test should apply now. There are three circuits applying it in this scenario versus the Ninth Circuit ruling previously in the Friends, and there are no other circuits going a different direction. But even if the Grotzinger case doesn't apply, I believe that the pension trust completely mischaracterizes the Friends. And your questions today hit it right on the head because you're right, the nexus, an economic nexus is not required, but it's still a factor to determine whether it's a trade or business.
But even IRS is the opposite, or I mean, my proposition was the opposite.
Well, I'm saying that.
I don't see why it's a factor. It's not a statute. It's not, the Friends says it's not a statute. It's not a factor. Why is it a factor?
Okay, I believe it's a factor because the language of the statute says it has to be a trade or business. And the reason the court got to that it's a trade or business is because it was meeting the purpose of the legislation was trying to take a piece of property that was removed from the primary business and renting it back.
I mean, you have a business covered by a multi-employer pension plan, and also Brad McDonald's. Clearly, that would be a trade or business.
If they were to own a McDonald's, absolutely.
Even though it had absolutely nothing to do with the business they were
running. Absolutely. That's why I say it's not the determining factor. It's just one of many, because LaFrenz's case said that we look at it as essentially a factual inquiry. It could be that it's related. In other words, a rent lease is back, therefore it meets the fractionalization purpose. It could be that it is a real trade or business that operates for profit under a separate name, advertising, it runs as a business, it's taxed as a business. I think you have a question.
Yes, sir, but I'm wondering if you can take everything you're saying as true, doesn't it create a question of material fact?
Well, it does.
For the jury to determine whether or not this was a trade or business.
It absolutely does if there were a dispute of facts. But it doesn't because there is no dispute over the factual basis. Everybody agrees that the Van Tools bought the property for personal financial planning purposes. Nobody says otherwise. Everybody agrees that it's not related. Everybody agrees that it was not obtained for the purpose of profit. It was a way of maintaining the property until the time that they could use it as retirement. What the issue was is the court in that scenario made those factual findings based on an undisputed record and then said, I believe that doesn't meet the test.
What was the exact context in which Gross & Turner was considering trade or business? Why did it matter in that case? Was it for the deductibility of business expenses?
Oh, I think it mattered in that case because Grossinger was trying to determine what the statute 2913.01b on meant by trade or business.
I understand. What was the context? What I'm trying to understand is these people, individuals, did treat this in their tax returns as supplemental income and deduct expenses, including travel expenses and so on. And report the income, but also, so were they treating it as a trade or business for tax purposes?
No, a passive investment. That's exactly what it's called in the tax code. That's what I believe they were treating it as. And then some of the cases say that a passive investment in and of itself is not enough. There's just passive investment activity that's not a trade or business, that you're not actively engaging in a trade or business, but it is separate income that you're allowed by the tax code to take deductions as a passive investment. And there are limitations on that. I can't take all my deductions. I can only take those up to the amount of money I'm making. There's a reason for that treatment. But if we apply that rule, a tax rule, we should apply Grossinger, because Grossinger said it's a tax rule you apply to this.
There's a little bit of problem there in terms of, say, a passive investment, tax purpose, and they did mark it in their Schedule E on the tax forms, and they profited from leasing the properties. And it seems a little inconsistent to profit it from it if it's primarily for charity.
Well, no, what the stated purpose was that they purchased the home so that it could be used by the church for a youth center. There was no testimony that said that they did not intend to maintain it by accepting rents, but it was far below the market value, and that's why they did it, primarily for the charitable reason of providing a youth center. A free youth center. So that's certainly not a trade or a business. And that the home is still theirs. It's not the church's home or the youth center's home. But they had to have some offset of that in order to be able to do it. And that was paid through the rent.
And what is it possible or could you consider whether or not you know, some of the real property constituted trade or business, but some of it didn't? Is that a possibility?
Under the trust, under the appellant's theory, no. Now, is there anything in the statute stopping the Ninth Circuit from saying we believe that there has to be some segregation of what pieces we think are or are not? The statute does not provide for such a thing. In fact, the statute...
The question, as I understand it, is we have three houses. Mm-hmm. One of them, they say they bought in order to allow the church to use it, and they were charging under market value.
would say that there is no specific permission to do so in the statute, nor case law, nor is there an opposite.
The question is whether it matters what the purpose is. And if you say the purpose of the first one was charitable, the purpose of the second one was vacation housing, though they sometimes rented it out, and the purpose of the third one was to make money, then you might say, well, the third one was a trade-off business.
I would agree. But the pension fund's position has been along that if any of them qualifies as trade-off business, it opens up all the assets of the mandrels.
I'm somewhat surprised to hear that, but I understand.
And I think it's very important to point out that the question of the stocks, for example, they owned Index, if the Vandals every day sat down at their computer and were trading the stocks within this index and making money on it for their retirement, is that now a business? Because they're actively doing something to make money on stocks being held. The problem with it is, it's the slippery slope. Where do you draw the line? You have to go back. If you don't use Grossinger, you have to go back to the friend's decision, and the judge at the district court level has to make a factual inquiry, not based on a single factor, but all of the factors. The factors are, is it related? Because if it's related, it triggers. Okay. The other factors are the purpose of obtaining the property in the first place. Was there a significant time spent in doing so? So it looked like it was being held for the purpose of retirement or for personal investment versus an ongoing business, like, for example, an apartment complex where you own 300 of them. Is taking the position that the mere fact that they lease it out instead of letting it sit there and rot for 20 years is what makes it a trader business. I disagree because it's no different than having a stock investment and doing it, or sitting in your home every day and making paintings and putting them in front of your house and selling them because you like to paint. There's no difference. You can't draw a distinction legally, so you have to go back to the purpose of the statute. The purpose of the statute was to stop fractionalization, to stop a company from putting the assets in one, operating at another, withdrawing, going bankrupt, or not being able to pay, and then protecting those assets, even though they were somehow also another business. That is not what, that purpose is not met by taking the private residential properties of mom and pop, Van Tool, and effectively wiping out their entire wealth for their retirement all at once simply because they had a rental home. That's what I believe the purpose of the statute is not meant, and the statute was never meant to do that. And interpreting it just on the black and white face of trade or business, you have to look at it. Does it smell and look like a business? That's what the lower court did. The lower court took the undisputed facts and said, this doesn't ever smell like a business. Well, that's why Grossinger's good, but the Ninth Circuit doesn't follow Grossinger, because I think Grossinger does set forth a good standard. And that's why I think three other circuits have followed that.
And the standard, tell me what that standard is.
The standard is you look to see whether it was operated for the primary purpose of business and obtained for that purpose, and whether there was significant time spent on an ongoing, continuing basis. Significant time spent. And that's why looking at those cases, when those courts have applied those cases, not a single case ever has ever held that private rental property that's not related to the other business is ever a trader business. Not a single case has ever found that. Any case was examined that has found the opposite, that it's not a trader business. Every single one. We said this in the lower court, we'll say it again. Not a single case has ever.
I don't know how many were actually just people's houses.
Okay, but even in the case where they. My point is, when it's not related, and it is this type of holding of an investment property, there's never been a holding that in any way, shape, or form finds it to be a trade or a business, whether you apply Grossinger or not. Any other questions? Thank you.
I have 1 minute. So, Grossinger, the context of it was that the Supreme Court was trying to determine whether a taxpayer's gambling activities were trade or business? Were his gambling losses a business deduction, or was this just a hobby or entertainment? Two-part test, was the primary purpose for income or profit? Did he engage in the gambling activity on a continuous and regular basis? That's the two-prong test of Kreutziger. The context in which it was developed and the purpose from which it was developed, the case was expressly limited to that purpose, and importing it into, you know, the issue of whether there's a trade or business under ERISA doesn't really fit very well, and has resulted in some decisions that I think had that in the Seventh Circuit that I think had Kreutziger not been applied, it would have come down to
can we disaggregate someone's real property from the other?
Well, yes, and the trust fund has always taken the position that all three of them met or trades or businesses because they were rented out for income. It is certainly possible for the district court to have found and for this court to find, reviewing de novo, that, you know, it would be possible to disaggregate them. As far as the purpose of the statute, the fractionalization purpose is a purpose, probably the primary purpose of the single employer rule. However, that purpose is effectuated by the statute that has much broader language, and it does not distinguish between trades or businesses that are fractionalized or not fractionalized. So the way that Congress decided to effectuate its purpose was with a statute that says all commonly controlled trades or businesses are treated as a single employer. There's no... It's hard to answer that question off the top of my head. I would say if it was for an entire year and then it was over and they never did it again, probably not a trade or business. The same way I know someone who used to live down the street from me rented out their home to a movie company for a month. No, that wouldn't be a trade or business. So I think there is a reason to look at the continuity of the activity and the length of time when the court...
I can ask the same thing that I asked your earlier opponent, and then you're finished. But give me a standard. What's the standard?
The standard is whether the activity meets the ordinary definition of a business.
Yes,
but what is
that? Factors or standards or something that helps us answer these questions, and neither of you is being very helpful to me.
Because we have...
You're saying what it is the integration with the original business, but aside from that, what is it?
Yeah, well, the guidance that we have is the trends, which says... We look at the facts here. They rented it out. That's plenty of trade or business. There isn't really a factor identified in the case. And I think,
of course, there is a difference there because what they have is a truck. A truck that is ordinarily used in business, not used to run around town.
Well, I think the standard is that if you're engaged in an activity where you're providing goods or services in exchange for money, that's a business.
Okay, thank you both very much.
Thank you.